Because most people, you know, they go, okay, I got my house washed or whatever service you provide. And then they don't remember who you are. They're living lives. You know, they're not thinking about you as much as you're thinking about them. So you have to stay top of mind. And that's really what's been our success, is always sending those postcards, keeping things kind of front of mind with the client.
The following podcast is brought to you by Thrive. Manage, run, and grow your business all from one dashboard using one login. Small business runs better on Thrive.
Hey, this is Gordon Henry at Winning on Main Street, the show dedicated to helping small businesses succeed. And this week we have an outstanding guest, Jonathan Maynard. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So quick intro on Jonathan. Jonathan was working in IT, information technology, about a decade ago and decided he no longer wanted to work for someone else. So he built and scaled three home services companies from the ground up, producing over seven figures in annual sales. Those companies are running well with great leaders at the helm. Jonathan is now dedicated to helping business owners get what they want out of business and life. He's the CEO of Red Door Unlimited, which serves as the holding company for brands such as Red Door Pro Wash, Red Door Lighting Company, Company 180, and Sunhands Media. He considers himself a problem solver with over 20 years of leadership experience. He quickly identifies organizational roadblocks, provides fast, efficient, effective solutions. He's also a professional keynote speaker, educating audiences on topics such as personal efficiency, time management, and business development. Passion is helping business leaders reach their potential, making organizations more efficient. What should you, our listeners, get out of this episode? If you're looking to start and scale a business, listen to people who have done it before. Jonathan is that guy. This show is brought to you by Thrive, T-H-R-Y-V. Small businesses run better on Thrive. So Jonathan, welcome to the show. Let's get started. Amazing story. You were an IT guy, basically making a living, and almost overnight, it seems, you became this amazing home services entrepreneur. How did that happen?
I was sitting in my IT job, and I decided that I did not like sitting at a desk. I did not like listening to other people tell me what to do. I always had these ideas of how things could get, you know, better and how I could make them better. And working in corporate, I always found a struggle. Anytime I brought ideas forward, it was like, yeah, it's fine. Just, you know, sit down, do your job. And I was like, but, you know, these are great ideas. Let's see what we can run with them. And, you know, as I kind of grew in my IT career and got, you know, management positions, I was able to implement those and I could see the change that was happening, but still felt unfulfilled. You know, I felt like I was out there making somebody else's dreams come true. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to do something on my own. And I was at this the apple picking festival, which we have out here in Virginia. And there was a guy selling kettle corn, and I love kettle corn. And there was this long line. And I thought, this is just very interesting. You know, that's a job. That's his business. That's what he does. And so I started doing some research, and I was like, okay, this is what it costs to get into it. So I started this like little kettle corn company, which actually I ended up growing and then selling, and it's still in business today, you know, because I was like, how much, you know, it's $12 for this bag. What does it cost to make that? And like with everything and labor, it was like $1.50. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting. So that was my first like foray into business, and then ended up growing and then selling that because it really turned into another job. And I didn't have the foresight at that point to go, oh, I need to hire people, because I still had the mentality of I've got to do it myself. And so ended up selling that and then starting a maid service and power washing company kind of simultaneously. I was looking for something that I could kind of start while I was still dipping my toes into the IT world, and then ended up growing and scaling those companies, selling the maid service company, keeping the exterior cleaning company, and then ended up, you know, starting a lighting company. And now I've got a epoxy flooring company and these other things that I'm kind of involved in. And now it's to the point where I really spend about an hour or two a week in each of those companies, just managing the day to day.
Wow. A lot to unpack there. But I was curious, just to sort of start off, Did you have any experience, other than you loved kettle corn, did you have any experience in either kettle corn or lighting or epoxy or power washing or any of those things you just said you did?
No experience. So, which is interesting. And it wasn't, it, you know, kettle corn is probably the only thing that was like a passion of mine, because I just, I really just like that. And then what I was looking for in a business, because I started going down this, the train of, okay, do I start a franchise? And the thing I didn't like about a franchise was I couldn't pivot. So they told me what I could sell. They told me what the price I had to sell it for. I had to buy the stuff from them. And then it felt again like I was kind of in another job. And so I said, okay, what is something that I can start that is low barrier to entry that I can learn to do? Because being in IT, I was not a blue collar worker. I've worked with my hands and I could do that, but I just didn't have a background in that. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to, just buy a pressure washer. I ended up buying a pressure washer and starting it, because I started this maid service and the guy was giving me a tour of the office park that we were in. And he said, hey, do you know anybody that does pressure washing? And I was like, I don't. What do you need? And he said, well, we need our sidewalks clean. The last guy, I can't get a hold of him. I think he might be out of business. And I said, well, what do you normally pay for this? And he said, oh, we normally pay anywhere between $2,000-$2,500, somewhere in there. And I was like, okay, hang on. I might be onto something here. So I knew a lot of realtors and things like that are kind of my network. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I bought the power washer. We washed the sidewalks and then ended up washing a house and I hated it. I was like, I have made a terrible mistake. And then I said, okay, we're going to have to figure out how to do this. I think I ordered a part for machine, and I got a card in the mail for some convention. And, that was kind of this power washing convention. That was an organization. And so I went there and I learned a ton. And I said, okay, this could be a viable business. And then started really educating myself on what, power washing, soft washing, that kind of whole industry looked like. And so, at first it was just me and, my little power washing trailer. And then, ended up hiring somebody, went through the throes of, employees and systems and trying to figure that out. And then now today we've got a bunch of trucks on the road. I've got a president who runs a company, service managers handle everything, technicians at work, office staff. And it's a beautiful thing now, because it's viable, it's creating jobs. And all I have to do is just keep a strategic oversight of the company. But it took a lot of hard work to get there.
Yeah. So I do want to get into the details of the companies, but I also want to hit on a point that I think probably resonates and excites a lot of people who may be listening, which is that you're only spending an hour or two on each of the businesses per week at this point. Now, how long was it from when you started the business to now when you're just in this strategic oversight, spending an hour or two? How much time transpired?
That took about five and a half years.
Wow. 5 years from, hey, we need a power washing guy, you know anybody, to owning, running, and now just strategic oversight where you have somebody running it for you. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So you're really kind of living the dream that a lot of people have now, right? Which is that you got it to the point where it's kind of running itself. Mm-hmm. And that took 5 years.
Yes.
Well, hats off to you. You obviously did a lot right. That's impressive. And what was the money you invested into the businesses over that time?
Initially, it was a few thousand dollars for the equipment, and we were paying rental on the office space, and which I would say, looking back, it was like there's no need for us to have an office. It's just I lived in another county and we were based in the county over. So running it out of my house is a little difficult, but there's different ways that you can bootstrap it. Or if you do have like a little nest egg, if you've got, $25,000 and you're like, okay, I want to do something with this. That's a really good business to get into. So it was just a little bit of, money for the equipment. And then supplies for power washing is pretty low. You've got sodium hypochlorite, some chemicals to do some stuff. But where I would suggest you spend the most money is in education, and going to the conventions that teach you how to do the things that you can learn about, both the technical aspect of it and then also the business side of it, which I think is honestly more difficult. It's a little bit more nuanced.
Wow, super impressive. Tell us a little bit about the marketing process that when you started. I mean, there's really three different businesses you're talking about. Did you have a system in place for how you would promote the businesses and get jobs?
And initially, no. So how I did it at first, because I was still working a full-time job, I didn't need, you know, 20 jobs a week. So what I did, I reached out to my own network. That was really the first foray into it, was saying, hey, I know, you know, five or six realtors. They're selling houses, so they can recommend me to clients. And so I started that way. The first one I did complimentary. I did it for free for a friend of mine just to say, hey, look, I'm just getting into this. I've power washed my house before, so I'm not going to, you know, destroy anything. And I had insurance. So I said, hey, I have insurance and everything's good. So did that and then did such a good job on it. He just started using me for different things and then putting it out there on Facebook. And then I was, doing the normal flyers, and I paid one of my kids to, you know, just go around to these neighborhoods, you know, and just ride the bike, go there, put the flyers, you know, in people's doors and, you know, started getting calls. And then it just started happening where I always focused the company, not on, you know, we're the best power washers, but it was, we're going to provide you the best customer service. We're going to give you a stress-free experience. And it was really about building the experience for the client versus, you know, we're the best power washer out there. Cause we will never be the best power washers. The best power washers are the guys that have been doing it for 20 years and it's just them and that's their trade. And, you know, that's what they do. They do the highest quality job. But we've got great technicians that do a really good job, but it's about the experience. And that's really how we did the, I guess, marketing and branding around the company.
And what did you do to deliver the great customer experience? Was it that you kept people informed of when you were going to show up? Did you wear clean uniforms? Did you make sure that everybody wore those like little rubber booties if they walk in the house? Did you send a thank you email? Like what did you do to create the customer experience?
Oh yeah. So the experience really starts from the time that we answer the phone. And first of all, we answer the phone. Most service companies don't. And so even in the beginning, when I was working my 9-to-5 job, I had an answering service that would take the phone calls for me. And, you know, hey, thanks for calling Red Door. You know, this is Sally. How can I help you? And it's, oh, we need a quote. Absolutely no problem. We can get somebody out there to blah, 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 you know, go through that. So that was a very low cost thing for me because I still had, you know, I had to be at my job during the day. I can't be answering the phone. But even if you're working a regular service company and you're working the day to day, if you're up on a ladder or you're washing somebody's house, you can't like always be going for your phone. So the phone call, making sure we're doing that. The other thing is showing up when we say we're going to show up, whether that's for the bid, whether that's for the job. And if there's delays, we always keep people informed. We use a CRM, you know, that does that. And I'm sure Thrive, I was looking at it and I was like, oh man, you know, the pain of switching CRMs is, you know, pretty brutal, but I was looking at like all the features. I was like, this is really good. And it's about keeping the people informed. And a lot of times you can set that up with automations, you know, the appointment is this day, it's text message reminders, and you make it sound very personal and not like it's coming from a bot. It's, you know, hey, Mark, this is, you know, Jonathan, we're going to be out there tomorrow at, you know, between 2 and 4 o'clock. Do you have any questions, comments, concerns, ? And then they can reply back. And then, you know, now one of our CSRs will look at it and they, you know, they're juggling the scheduling and things like that, but it's just doing what you say you're going to do. And then you do the work. And after the work, you immediately send an email, text message and say, hey, how did you like things? And then depending if they were like, oh, it's wonderful, blah, blah, blah. Great. You know, we're small business. You know, referrals are huge to us. And we've got a referral program that I developed that is amazing because it gives the customer incentive for referring you. So we pay them 10% for referring people. And so if they like it, that's great. If they don't, if they like, oh, you missed a spot, or if there's a problem, we were always, you know, there. We always left room in our schedule every week to go out and do touch-ups if that's necessary. Now, our goal is no touch-ups, but we know they're employees, they're humans, things are going to happen. Even when I was washing houses myself, every once in a while, you just don't see something, or the customer, you have to explain something. Like, we've got particular things that happen in our area that, you know, you think would come off with the power washing. It just doesn't. It's non-organic stuff. So it's following up after the sale. And if there's a problem, making sure you're staying on top of that. And then after that, you just send them postcards. We do postcards every 6, 9, 12 months. And then, you know, and then every 6 months after that, because we're going to stay top of mind. Because most people, you know, they go, okay, I got my house washed, or whatever service you provide. And then they don't remember who you are. They're living lives. You know, they're not thinking about you as much as you're thinking about them. So you have to stay top of mind. And that's really what's been our success, is always sending those postcards, keeping things kind of front of mind with the client.
And did you find those postcards led to future jobs?
Oh, absolutely. Because they would get a 12-month reminder and they go, oh yeah, my house is looking kind of dirty. And that was the same time that they bought last year or 2 years prior. And for us, we like cleaning clean things. Because it's just easier and the customer likes it. So it's not as dirty as it was before. So it's easier to clean. The customer's happier. And it, we turn it into kind of this maintenance thing versus a emergency thing. And we're, you know, that staying in front of them has always led to more jobs. It's so much easier and it costs so much less money to re-engage your current clients than it does to go find new clients.
Yeah. I mean, everything you've said makes so much sense. And sometimes I wonder why so many small to medium-sized businesses struggle when, you know, what you've laid out, which all sounds like common sense, is really kind of a path to achieving this organic growth. I mean, you started, yes, you reached out to a network, but then you stayed in touch with your customers. Those customers were happy and came back for follow-up jobs. They referred friends and family and colleagues, and the business grew organically. How much additional marketing have you had to do with those businesses beyond the existing customer base and referrals?
Well, I mean, yeah, we spend about 10% of our revenue on marketing. You know, and that's just normal for us and other people that I've talked to. I say 10%. When we were really in our growth phase, it was 15 to 20%. I was reinvesting a lot of our money back into that growth because I knew, you know, our customer acquisition cost was this. I knew that, you know, it's all numbers, and you can reverse engineer anything. If you say, I want to do X amount of dollars in revenue, you can reverse engineer and you know exactly how much money you have to spend on marketing to get that based on past performance. It's really just all a math game. And so in the beginning, I did have to spend, you know, quite a bit to get the customers. But once I got them, you know, it cost us, I think, $135 to acquire a new customer. It costs us $50 to maintain the life of a customer, whatever that lifetime value is. It's only $50. And we can get, you know, 7, 8, 10 more jobs out of that customer for that $50.
How did you ensure quality control so that the jobs would be provided, you know, in a quality way where the customer would be happy?
First of all, it was only doing the things that I knew that I could do. There were countless times where customers were like, hey, could you remove that beehive? Nope, I can't do that. Or can you do this? And it's so tempting when you're new in business, when people go, hey, can you paint that fence? And you go, I could use a few hundred dollars. Sure, I can paint the fence. You don't know how to paint a fence. So it was really kind of sticking to what I knew in the beginning and then documenting everything. You know, I would be out there with my iPhone, you know, taking pictures, or my 12-year-old son at the time. I was like, hey, I need you to record me washing this house, and I'm just going to walk through what I'm doing. And he's like, why are you doing that? And I said, it's a training video. He's like, it's just you. And I said, well, next week, it might not be just me. So got the training videos, and then, you know, I went out there, and now that hindsight 2020, I should have put them all on YouTube and I could have retired by now. But really in the beginning, it was creating those systems, and I'm a systems geek. Everything is documented, you know, everything in its place, a place for everything, that sort of thing. Because that, I think that's what's helped us, especially with employees and making sure that everything's kind of the same. All of our trucks, with the exception of one, has got, you know, the same exact equipment in the same exact spot. Because we want to make sure that if an employee grabs this truck or that truck or that truck, that it's going to be the same. So it's these systems and processes that I've kind of set up from the beginning that have helped ensure that we're able to deliver a quality, consistent job every time.
Yeah. They used to, you know, use that phrase, I guess, SOP, standard operating procedure. And it used to be an employee would walk in and they would hand you a manual, which most people probably didn't read. But now you've made it so much easier with a series of videos. So I can just go look at the videos and I know as a new employee what I'm supposed to do. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So I used a free program. I think at the beginning I was using Talent LMS. They've got a free version. You get up to 5 users. And so I had all the videos in there. And then I created these little quizzes, you know, for the video. So it's like, hey, if you're doing a house wash, what do you set the proportioner to? Or if you're doing this, what do you set it to? So they're both seeing it, and then they've got a practical understanding, and then they've got a quiz to make sure that they did watch and understand. And now we actually go through and we do a hands-on, I think it's up to a week now, where we do hands-on like training, and it's on training houses and things like that, where you know, it's not actual customer live houses where they're paying. And then after that, then they're paired with somebody and they go through a full, it's probably like a 60-day training process with a team trainer. And the entire way they're making sure, first of all, that the person fits our culture. And it's not just somebody that is good at doing the job, but they also fit our core values. And if they don't fit our core values, I don't care how good of a washer they are, they just can't be here, because it's going to provide a kind of a toxic environment, because our core values are, you know, what our team stands for. And if somebody is going to be like, one of our core values is professional. And if they're going to act in an unprofessional way, or they're, you know, they're not going to fit that, then, you know, they're just not going to make it. So they do that. And then they also have the skills test to make sure that they can do what they're supposed to do. I can teach anybody how to wash. I can't teach people how to be principled, personal, professional, or purposeful.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about hiring, and you've just explained it. So you really do have a culture, and you stick to that as a key aspect of that's your system, really, for yes, culture, right? Your system for people. You talked a lot about the power washing, but you have multiple businesses. You have additional. Can you talk a little bit about the other businesses, and were those all kind of copy paste in terms of your approach to setting those up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the power washing was the one where I kind of built the infrastructure for everything. And then I decided I was going to add Christmas lights to our power washing company, and went, and, you know, that way that people could stay, you know, employed during the winter. And then it grew so much that it was like, okay, this has to be two separate companies now. And they're sister companies. And a lot of the same people overlap in those two companies, but then we also have to hire labor to be able to do the lights and things like that and manage the warehouse and whatnot. And now we're adding landscape lighting and things like that to kind of round out that that bulk of the business. But really, it was taking the systems, processes, the culture is the same in both of those companies, and then just ramping it up and now, you know, hiring salespeople to go out and sell landscape lighting and then the Christmas lights during the Christmas light season. And that was really a copy paste of those companies. And then I've got Solid Garage Floor Coatings, which is a garage floor epoxy coating company. And again, Ryan runs that company for me, and, you know, they do a great job. And it really was just taking those processes, systems, the things that I learned there, and just going, okay, What's another vertical that we can enter? And it's not all sunshine and rainbows. You know, when I first started that, you know, that company, I was having to, you know, be out there. I've put down floors myself. And so when you're first starting, it's a little bit of a churn to get it, you know, get it moving. But once you do, the marketing is the same. You know, the people are the same. The problems are pretty much the same, no matter whatever company that I go into. And now Company 180, which is my newest company, which is a year and some change old. Now all we do is EOS implementation and consulting. So
say that again, ELS?
EOS. So it's Entrepreneurial EOS. Operating System. It's okay. Based on a book by Gina Wickman called Traction. And essentially all it is just making sure that your core values, everything is lined up. And then you make sure that you've got the right people, they're in the right place, you have the systems documented, and then you have traction. Mm-hmm. So I go in there and as an implementer, I just look at people's businesses and just implement that system, which is a system that I self-implemented in my companies. And it doesn't matter what industry you're in, most businesses are the same fundamentally. And so I was like, okay, so I could start this. Now, Solid Garage Floor Coating is the last service company I'll probably ever start. I've got a running joke with some entrepreneurial friends of mine. I said, you know, if I start another service company, you can beat me up. Because it's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. And so now I'm looking at acquisitions as a mode of scaling versus starting from the ground up, because a startup is, you know, it's difficult. So acquisition is probably the best way to do it, but acquisition takes a lot of money.
Right. So you went into the home services space. You didn't have the experience in the home services space. Other than this, it sounds like kind of fortuitous conversation about, hey, do you know any power washers? Did you have any reason for going into home services? You could have gone into any field, right? How did you sort of pick home services?
Yeah, it's funny because somebody was like, why didn't you start an IT company? And I was I don't like IT so much, but I did. But it's just different. Honestly, the reason I started it, because I saw a need. I was a homeowner at the time. And still am, obviously, but I was unable to find good companies to do work for me. And, you know, I'd call them, they wouldn't return their calls. Or if I got a quote from them, you know, I was like, okay, I want to hire you, then I could never get back in touch with them. And I thought, I could do this better. As a homeowner, I know what I expect. And if I could deliver what I expect to other people expect the same different things or the same things. So it only made sense to start a company where I could deliver that experience. No matter what service I was providing, I'm still providing the experience.
Your LinkedIn, I went on your LinkedIn, and it says you were director of IT at a company called Spotswood until 2020. So did you have a day job while you were launching the Red Door and other brands?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that ended in 2020. I had it was a full-time position. It's a big nonprofit, and they've got a ton of users. So I was having to do all the IT and communications and all that kind of stuff. And then slowly started phasing myself out. So I went from a full-time employee to a part-time employee, then to a part-time contractor. And then finally I was like, okay, guys, you have to hire this out. I don't want to deal with this anymore. So during that time, when I first started the company, I had a regular like 8-to-5 job. I'd get off of work and I would, you know, go put on my scrubs and go out there and do power washing or, you know, do it on the weekends. And then finally got to the point where it was rocking and rolling. And then I hired somebody to do the work. It was him and actually his brother. He was like, hey, my brother's really good at this. And I think it'd be a good, you know, opportunity for us. And I said, that's terrific. So I ended up hiring employees, and I didn't have to quit my job. which is a very weird way of going about it, because everybody's like, you know, either they've got fired or got laid off and they're like, I need to do something. So they start a company. Not too many people in my position where it's like, okay, I've got a really good paying position. And they were a little bit of golden handcuffs at the beginning. You know, I probably could have scaled faster if I would have just said, okay, we're going to just quit everything and go do it. But it's scary. And so, you know, I just went a different route, and it was, you know, going from that full-time position. And then after it kind of got going and things were doing, you know, what they should, I said, okay, I went to the board and I said, look, I need to back down to part-time. Here's some things we can do. It's not going to cost you any more money. Your level of service is going to remain the same, blah, blah, blah. And then kind of just slowly phased myself out as opposed to just jumping. So there's pros and cons to both.
Just curious, did Spotswood, your employer, know that you were starting these other businesses on the outside? Were they okay with that?
Yeah. And that was, I went, and when I first started, I was like, I need to go read my employee manual. And so I was flipping through, and as you know, I could start any business as long as it wasn't in direct competition or it wasn't the same. Like I couldn't go start an IT company because it was the same job. So this was something different. And they were super nice, and they were like, okay, as long as it doesn't interfere, if it starts to interfere, we'll have a conversation. And I was like, great, it's not going to interfere. You won't even know. And then that's when I ended up having to hire the calling service, the answering service, to make sure that, you know, I wasn't being disturbed during the day. And, you know, at lunch, I would check messages and things like that and then go back to work. So a little bit of a different path, but it worked out.
So just kind of summing up your little empire here that you built over the last 5-6 years, is it 4 companies, 5 companies? How big is this operation?
So I've got 3 service companies that run, and that's Red Door Lighting Company, Red Door Pro Wash, and Solid Garage Floor Coatings that I own all of, that I just manage the strategic oversight of. Company 180, that's me. That's just consulting, EOS implementation, things like that. My public speaking all runs kind of through that. And then I do have investments in other businesses. For example, I'm the acting CEO. We're finishing up a search and one of the owners of a thing called the Huge Convention. And it's a convention that takes place every year in Nashville. And it's for power washers, window washers, epoxy flooring, all the companies that kind of like me and like other business associates own. And last year we had 1,500 people there. This year we're expecting about 2,000. We've got a giant trade show where a bunch of vendors come in and talk. And then we do a lot of education. So it's really the premier education platform for the home service business outside of electrical, plumbing, HVAC. Those guys got a lot of money. They've got their own thing happening. We're not going to interfere with that because they're, we want to really serve the, what I would call the underserved home service businesses, you know, landscapers, things like that, maid services. So we get a bunch of people there, and that's what we do. And then we've got a quarterly mastermind called AMP that kind of goes along with that too, lower cost. And so I own part of that. I own part of several other like small companies, just investments in those. So just kind of juggling. There's I got a few things on the plate, but nothing that's overwhelming.
Yeah, that's terrific. And how many people do you have working in these businesses?
Probably about 50-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's staying in that magical number. The IRS is very particular, and once you cross 50 employees, then you have a whole nother set of rules imposed on you, whether it's 50 employees or 100 employees. So my goal is really, I like where I'm at with those. They run, you know, I get distributions, I'm happy. Eventually they'll scale, and you know, there's always talk of, do I sell, do I not, do we roll up and things like that. So, you know, it's up in the air. Who knows?
No decisions about that.
No.
Uh-huh.
Right now it's an ATM.
What made you go into the public speaking? That was kind of a new area for you, wasn't it?
It was. I think the, you know, it's hard to answer that. Like why did you do it? I was asked a lot, and it's funny, I'm about to get on a plane to fly to Orlando to speak to a group of power washers. And same reason that I was invited on this podcast, it's like, hey, you've done some pretty cool things. Why don't you talk about it? Mm-hmm. And so my keynote really, it doesn't revolve around pressure washing or anything. It actually revolves around goals. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there? And most people don't set goals. And those that do actually set the wrong kinds of goals. They set goals that I call mirage goals. These are goals that leave you unsatisfied. These are goals like, oh, if only I could make $100,000. If only I could, you know, get that second truck. If only I could do this. And then once you get there, you're standing there and you go, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. Mm. And so it's really about finding goals that give you fulfillment. Things like, how do I want to impact the world? You know, maybe that's teaching reading to you know, underprivileged second graders, or maybe it's, you know, funding a local, you know, library or something like that, whatever your passion is, but you have to figure out what that is, find out what your purpose is, and then you can go and move towards that. So that's really what the keynote revolves around. And that's why I wanted to start public speaking, because there's, you know, you just need to get information out there that's going to help other people. And if my story helps other people, I'm happy to share it.
Well, that's terrific. I can't think of a better way to end this episode other than to ask you, where can people find you and learn more about what you're doing?
Sure. Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. It's I am Jonathan Maynard. They can also email me at jonathan@company180.com and happy to answer questions regarding anything. You can also go to company180.com and find me there.
Awesome. Well, Jonathan, I really want to thank you for coming on the show. Just great to have you here. And what a story. You know, hats off to you. I mean, you're like what every entrepreneur wants to be. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate it.
I want to thank our producer, Tim Alleman, and our coordinators, Diette Barnett and Daniel Huddleston. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your colleagues, friends, and family to subscribe. And please leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. Helps us in the rankings. Remember, small business runs better on Thrive. Get a free demo of our Thrive CRM at thrive.com. That's thryv.com. Until next time, make it a great week.